We are up to Ezra Perek Zayin, Pasek Vav. Okay, Pasek Vav. So yesterday we concluded by being Miyaches Ezra. After Pasek Perek Zayin began with telling us that after the Beis Hamidrash was complete, after the Mikdash was rededicated, and then Ezra made his ascent. Ezra ascended to Eretz Yisrael. This was jumping ahead in history 25 years. 25 years since the... Well, about 10 years since the conclusion. Well, we have the exact numbers here. We'll see the Pesukim in the 7th year. But the point is, it was after the Mikdash was already in operation, after the dedication, and now Ezra first arrives on the scene. Ezra here, we are in Pasuk Zayin, beginning of Perek Zayin, we trace his lineage. 16 generations. There are more. There are 8 generations which are missing, which were presented in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, is where we have the complete genealogy of Ezra HaSofer. Pasuk Vav continues. Who Ezra? It is this Ezra, Allah mi Bavel, who ascended from Bavel. Who Sefer Mahir? We have a beautiful description of who Ezra was. It's very rare for Tanakh anywhere to give titles of honor. Generally speaking, Chumash and Tanakh, we super magnify minor imperfections. But here we have a beautiful description of who was Ezra, who Ezra, Olam Babel, who Sefer Mahir. He was a brilliant scribe. The word Mahir means clear. Mitzudo Sion says, Hipoch min Koshe HaHavana. Okay, so it's interesting. Over here, this itself is a fascinating idea that the Mitzudos cannot find the proper word to translate the word Mahir. So it gives us the opposite, the antonym. It's the opposite of someone that has a hard time understanding something. Kosha Havana. There are people that are thick. Okay, things don't come not so easy. It's the opposite. A person who's brilliant. Today the word brilliant is abused. Everyone's brilliant and everyone is so smart. And everyone is the best boy in Lakewood.
Everyone's a Talmud.
It's like why I should.
Today everything is, nothing is for real. What?
We grandparents like to think all our grandkids are geniuses.
Are geniuses and brilliant, and there's never been someone like this in the history of the world. I once heard the ultimate someone was praising someone. They said, someone like him was never created. So I think that was above and beyond brilliant. That I think really
threw away the mold.
God created him
and threw away the mold.
He was impish.
Okay, so we have many expressions, but in Tanakh, this was before the 21st century. It was before our time, and when Tanakh gives Shevach v'Hoidah, when it says, it really means it. So when it says here, Sefer Mahir, we have to really appreciate the depth of the praise that we are ascribing to Ezra. The Mitzudos, again, Sion, we don't even have a word to really clarify. The best we can do is say the opposite, Hu Hipoch. It's the opposite, Min Koshe HaHavana.
From a quick,
Enechanami, correct. He was very quick to absorb, to understand. But it has even a greater connotation. Brilliance, true brilliance. Like those images of a light bulb going off in your mind. Okay, fine. The Saras Moshe and the law of Moshe, Shenosna Hashem Elokei Yisrael, which was given by Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Vayitin Lo HaMelech, the Melech, referring here to Artach, Shast, referring to Daryavesh, gave him Kiyar Hashem. He gave him whatever he wanted. That's that we have to read the pasuk out of order. This is like a pasuk in Yeshaya, where you have to take the whole phrase and then read the words out of order in order to make sense out of it. Vayitin loy hamelech kiyar Hashem elikov olav kol ba ko shoso. So take the word vayitin loy and connect it with the word kol ba ko shoso, that Artach Shast Daryavish gave Ezra everything that he wanted, his every request, because he recognized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is resting upon this individual whose name is Ezra.
Also, Hashem gave Chen
gave chen in the eyes of Ezra before. It doesn't say the word chen, but it says here, it's interesting, it's just why over here does it say Yad Hashem? You have in Tanakh Yosef, that Yosef, Hashem gave Yosef chen in the eyes of Paro. Here it doesn't say that. It doesn't say any, I don't believe there's any reference that Ezra had chen. It's a very interesting concept. You're really bringing up a very interesting point, different expression. Here the expression that it's described is Yad Hashem Elokov Olav. That's not chen. It's something different. What exactly is the difference? What?
Favor someone.
When you favor someone, that's chen.
Favor.
You find favor in their eyes. But it doesn't say the word chen. The Ezra, whoever wrote the Sefer, Nehemiah, the Anshei Knesset Hagdol, who wrote put the Sefer into writing, they had at their disposal every word in Tanakh that they chose to express it with the words Kiyad Hashem Elokavolav, which is equivalent in our terminology as Chayin. Let us see Rashi Pasuk Vav Vayitain Lo Hamelech Daryovesh. Who's the Melech here? It's Daryovesh. In other words, Rashi is coming to say, do not make a mistake. Shalom Aleichem. Aleichem Shalom. Rashi over here is coming to make a point. Do not make a mistake. I think that the Melech here refers to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, because maybe would be inclined to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted his request. No, it means here that Daryovish, Kiyad Hashem Elokov Olav. So Rashi says, Kasher Tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Olav. So I told you that it means chen. I believe others say that.
The
Mitzuda says chen. Does it say chen? I told you from the Mitzudos. Okay, I jumped the gun. But Rashi learns not like the Mitzudos. Rashi learns that Ezra was a Navi. Muhammad, thank you very much for the tissues. So here, Kiyad Hashem, Rashi, Kasher Tziva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Olav, as Hashem commanded. So he, Ezra, was a prophet. Hashem spoke to Ezra. We don't know the exact conversation, but Chazal do tell us that he was a Navi, and we learned that yesterday that he was Malachi, Chagai Zechariah Umalachi. Rashi says it explicitly, he was Malachi, and therefore he was a prophet. A prophet, Hashem speaks to prophets, and Hashem commanded Ezra exactly what to do, and Ezra relayed these requests, his needs, to Daryovesh, who had at his possession the resources, and it was given a mikra mesuras. So this pasuk has to be read out of order, typical for what you have in the Vim Rishonim. Ve'itin lo hamelech kol ba'koshoso. So that's like they take the word kol ba'koshoso, put it in the beginning of the pasuk, ve'itin lo, and what? Whatever Ezra asked. What did Ezra ask? He did not invent. He did not make up these requests. These requests were handed down to him directly from the source, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kiyad Hashem Elokav Olav. The Amir Rabbi Senu Zichron Levracha. Ezra Hu Malachi. Again, Rashi repeats this. Maybe before it was the Mesudas that said it. But here again, here Rashi makes it very clear that I guess Rashi here at this point is telling us, really? Hashem spoke to him. Because Rashi Lishitasai is Taichin Kiyad Hashem Elokav Olav, which means the word Yad here means the command of Hashem upon him, which is an unusual translation of the word Yad. But that's what it means. And Rashi obviously is bothered, really? Did Hashem speak to Ezra? Where do we find anywhere in Sefer Ezra that Hashem spoke directly to him? And the answer is, you're right. You're not going to find it in the Pasuk in Ezra. It's only a Chazal that Ezra was Malachi. And if Ezra is Malachi, so we can go to the Nevu and Sintreya, so we can see exactly what Hashem spoke to Ezra. And there we will find, or we assume that Hashem told him, well, you need this amount of money, these animals, these kalim, these are the needs that you, these are the resources that you need in order to establish a strong Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. Let's see the Mesudas David Pasuk Vav. Vayitim loy hu hipoch. This is a mikra mesuras. Hipoch, according to the terminology of the Mesudas, is equivalent to what Rashi says. A mikra mesuras. Kilu Omar vayitim loy hamelech kol bakoshoso. The king Daryovish gave Ezra everything that he requested. Kiyad Hashem. What are those words, Kiyad Hashem? Not like Rashi, that Hashem spoke, Hashem handed down, but rather, Kimo Shehoya Olav, Koyach Hashem, Litein Chino Be'enei HaMelech. So Yad means it was the power of Hashem that put in Ezra Chayin. So chen here is to be understood between the lines. It doesn't say chen explicitly like it says by Yosef, but it says yad. Yad is affiliated, associated with the koyach. Chen comes from the power of Hashem. And therefore, since he was well liked, anything that he would request was granted. Okay, let's go pasuk. Now, before we go further, there's a very important medrash. The medrash over here says that Ezra, it compares Ezra to both Moshe and to Aaron. On the one hand, Ezra was a kohen. And that's what we learned. We learned in Pas Perek Zayin, we were Miyaches Ezra all the way back to Aroin HaKoyin. 16 generations, missing 8. But we have here going back all the way Ben Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Ben Aharon HaKoyin Horosh. And then Pasig Vav says, who Ezra? So Chazal interpret this to mean the juxtaposition of these two psukim, the way it is worded, allows us to read, to connect Pasuk Hey with Pasuk Vav. HaKoyen HaRoish, who Ezra? Ezra was roy to be the Koyen Roish. In other words, if there was no Aaron, didn't exist, he would have been, if he was living in the generation of Aaron HaKoyen, he would have been equal to Aaron, perhaps even greater than Aaron. That is in his capacity, in his role as the Kohen Gadol. That's who Ezra, HaKohen HaRoish, who Ezra? Ezra was right to be the Kohen Gadol, even going back to the time of Aaron HaKohen. And that begs the question, why then wasn't Ezra the Kohen Gadol when he arrived in Yerushalayim? Even though it's true the Beis HaMikdash was rededicated, and we had a Kohen Gadol, Yehoshua was now the Kohen Gadol, so why didn't Yehoshua step aside and let Ezra take over? So that's not a good question. That's not a nice thing to say. That's debatable. You can multitask. You always say if you want to get something done, you must give it to a busy person. A busy person is always busy, knows how to optimize, make the most out of his time. If you have an important task, if you give it to a person there's a lot of time on his hands, it'll never get done. You give it to a person that is very busy, doesn't have a moment to spare, he'll get it done. Because the nature of such a person who's busy, he knows how to squeeze in every last second, he'll get it done. So just because he was very busy, obviously, in establishing the entire structure of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, and making sure that the Klal Yisrael, the Torah, will be preserved for all generations, he would have been a very good Kohen Gadol. We could assume that for sure, however, but that's not a nice question to ask, because once a person is already appointed in their position, there's no such thing as telling them to be pushed aside. Even if that person is not as, even if it's someone that's greater and more qualified, once you have a chazak, I mean, this is halach, you have a person, you have a shul, and you have a rabbi, all of a sudden comes and moves into town a very great person, he's a greater rabbi, he's a very greater Talmud Chacham. Why are you going to tell the current rabbi, okay, step aside, let this person take over? Ridiculous. You have a shul, you have a person as a chazaka to be a shliach tzibur, he davens on the yamim neirohim, comes into town, moves into town, a person with a beautiful voice, you're going to tell the shliach tzibur has been davening for 10 years, okay, you're going to step aside, we're going to let this person daven on the yamim neirohim? Terrible. That's not the way the world works. Persons in the so therefore, once Yehoshua the Kohen Gadol was appointed as the Kohen Gadol, that's it. Even though Ezra now has arrived on the scene, and even though the pasuk tells us that this person Ezra, who's living 26 generations approximately since the time of Aaron HaKohen, would have been even greater than Aaron or equal to Aaron, we're still not going to tell Yehoshua the Kohen Gadol to step down. That's an incredible insight, because you can imagine if Moshe Rabbeinu would come today. Okay, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu would be different. But you don't tell a person who currently occupies the position to step aside because there's someone that's greater has arrived on the scene, even if that person is far, far greater than the one that currently has the position. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaShkocha Pratis, worked it out that Ezra did not make Aliyah together with the 42,360 about 25 years ago. Why not? Because Chazal point this, Yehoshua's father was a Kohen Gadol. And I don't remember the exact words, but Kosha, it's difficult by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to break the shalsheles, the chain of leadership and authority in Klal Yisrael when there is a son that is roy to mimamale the makom of the father. So since Yehoshua's father was a Kohen Gadol, and Yeshua's grandfather, there was a whole chain of Kohanim Gedolim in this particular family. Now, if Ezra would, if Baruch Bene, we discussed yesterday, the reason why Ezra did not make Aliyah until 25 years since the time that Koresh gave permission was because he was studying under his Rebbe, Baruch Ben Neiria, and he would not leave his Rebbe's side. And now, according to Halacha, you're not allowed to. Talmud Torah is more important than Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it that Baruch Ben Neiria will be Marich Yamim such a long period of time to prevent Ezra from ascending to Eretz Yisrael? It's because Hashem did not want Ezra to go to Babel. Hashem wanted Yehoshua to be the Kohen Gadol, because Yehoshua's father was the Kohen Gadol, and Yeshua's grandfather was the Kohen Gadol, and his great-grandfather was the Kohen Gadol. If Ezra would have made Aliyah together 25 years ago at the time of Koresh, so there has not been anyone there for 52 years, no one has had the office of the Kohen Gadol, it would have been obvious, hands down, Ezra would have been appointed to become the Kohen Gadol. Even though it's true that Yehoshua's father, but there was a break. And once there is a break, then it's a new system. Then Ezra, it would have been Derech Eretz to make Ezra the Kohen Gadol. But it was still painful, Kaviyachal, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take away from Yehoshua the Kohuna Gedola because his father was a Kohen Gadol. So Al Pi Halacha, technically, according to the proper protocol, had there's been a break 52 years, Ezra would have been. But it was still painful, Kaviyachal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should take or deny the Yehoshua. So Hashem brought about that Baruch ben Neiria should be Marich Yamim much more than usual. So Ezra would not leave his side. Ezra would remain in Babel, and then they would go and they would rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and there would be a Chanukah, and Yehoshua would be officially appointed in the capacity of the Kohen Gadol because Ezra is not on scene. And now when Ezra arrives, it is too late. So this is a Chazal, this is a Medrash, and they point it out. But the important point that brings out this entire issue is the connection of Ben Aaron HaKohen, Horosh Hu Ezra. Read these two psukim together. The next important point is, not only is Ezra shakel keneged Aaron, there's also shakel keneged Moshe. It goes on to say, Hu Sofer Mohir, a brilliant scribe, Besoras Moshe, in the Torah of Moshe. So we make mention of Moshe, and we also make mention of the word Allah. Let me read you the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, and Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Roy Hoya Ezra Shetinasein Torah Al Yado Li Yisrael. Il Mole Kedamai Moshe. If Moshe Rabbeinu had not yet been born, Ezra would have been selected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the Shliach to bring down the Torah. It would have been Torah Ezra, not Torah Moshe. Why? How do we know this? What's the Makar? From this Pasuk. Moshe, it says, Moshe Allah El Hu Elohim. Moshe ascended to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uve Ezra Hu Oimer, Hu Ezra, Allah mi bavel mo aliyah he'amur kan b'moshe es Torah. The word aliyah by Moshe is a reference to Torah. Af aliyah he'amur lahalon be'ezra is Torah. So it's a Gemara. The Gemara makes this. There's a tradition. Hekish. It's a Chazal. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is not a modern devar. It's a Gemara. Ezra was roy to be the shakel keneged Moshe Rabbeinu. So you have something that was incredible, which is awesome. You have two Chamamare Chazal. One tells us Ezra is shakel keneged Aaron, and the other says Ezra shall connect Moshe. So Ezra will shall connect both. That's how great he was. We can't even be masik. And he also had the chain. And you don't find by Moshe. You do find by Moshe. He had chain, right? And you find this another degree. He had chain. He had chain. The ene and the world power of Dariavish.
There's a similarity between, because as it relates to Aaron, it looks like he was even bigger than Aaron. Because it says, Hu Harosh. Whereas, compared to Moshe, it's possible he was equal.
I hear what you're saying. Okay, you have to be medactic in the exact words of the Midrashim. I hear, okay. That requires further study. Okay, it's a point. Very good point.
And Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe of
Yeah.
Ezra's Rebbe Kohen instead of. And in other places, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu, Rebbe Akiva, is coming and the Mepharishim tugging on the Torah. He showed He deserved.
Right. Well, he Ezra. We're going to see what he did in a few moments, what his role was. But you're right. You make a very good point because in here I have the Medrash to Koheles Rabbah, where it says that he connects Ben Aaron Hakayin Harosh who Ezra Hakayin Harosh. The words are explicitly. Ilu hoya Aaron kayam hoya Ezra godol mimenu. It says explicitly. But when it comes to Moshe, it doesn't say greater. It says if Moshe was not born, if Moshe did not exist, was not kidamot, preceded him, then he would have been roi hoya Ezra. It doesn't say that he would have been greater than Moshe. Okay, so you're making a good point. By the Kohen Gadol, we call him godol, and by Moshe, we're saying that he was. He would have been in place of Moshe, not necessarily greater than Moshe. So let's go further. So these are the two important midrash. Now another important thing we have to make note of the word sofer. We know that all over in the Gemara, Talmidei Chacham are called soferim. Now we already, but some of us we're already brainwashed, and we think the word sofer it's automatic. It means a scribe. It means a Talmud Chacham. But literally, sofer means someone who counts. Person who counts. So why is that so? So there are different reasons given. One reason given, the similar reason given is that in the Torah they counted the letters. They counted the letters, and every letter counts. Sometimes a word is mole, sometimes it is choser, which means there are extra. There are vavs and yuds. And sometimes a word can be spelled with a vav, without a vav, with a yud, without a yud. Toitofos. Tefillin. Sometimes it's spelled two vavs, sometimes it's spelled with one vav, and sometimes there are no vavs. You have words, kavod, honor. Sometimes it's spelled with a vav, sometimes without a vav. Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim throughout the entire Tanakh is spelled choser, without a yud. The only time it's spelled mole is in Megillas Esther. So if you know the exact number of letters in the Torah, you count the letters, you will know exactly which letter is mole, which letter is chaser, and that represents the ultimate chokhmah. Because knowing the limudim, the Maamari Chazal, the depth of why a word is missing a letter or has an added letter, gives you very deep understanding in the inner meaning of the word and of the pasuk of the entire concept. So that's why Talmid, the highest level of Talmidei Chachamim are described as being sofrim. Not only do they know the obvious, do they know what it says? The obvious, it says, they can read you the pasuk, they can quote chapter and verse. But they can tell you the deeper, hidden meaning of the pasuk. And that's alluded to by, they can tell you how many letters appear in that pasuk. And if you would write the pasuk on your own, you would write more letters. You'd write a pasuk, you write, there are 25 letters in this pasuk. But they'll tell you, no, there are 24 letters. There are 26 letters, 27 letters. Because of these two words, it's written either mole or choser. Why? Because there's a deeper, hidden message. Oh, there's a deeper hidden message. That's something that's unique only to very great Talmidei Chachamim. The average person doesn't understand the depth. They just understand the superficial. They read the pasuk, whatever it says. That's what I understand. I don't know the Sisrei Torah. So Talmidei Chachamim are called Soifrim because they know the extra missing letters, which represents a concept. They know the hidden meaning of the Torah. That's a very popular approach to understand why Talmidei Chachamim are called counters, right? Now another reason why they're called soifrim is the word soifer comes from the word saper. We're going to have this in the next pasuk. Saper, which means to speak. Laman to saper, you will relate. Saper means to relate, to transmit. Torah shebal peh. Talmidei Chacham are the ones that transmit the oral Torah to the next generation. So we take that word saper, to transmit, and we play with it, and we call them a sofer, someone who counts, or we really try as a scribe, someone who writes, but it's rooted in the meaning of transmitting the Torah from one generation to the next generation. Okay.
To recount.
Okay, but the cat, that's a play on the word. It's a pun. To recount. Really, what it means? Okay, that's fine. Okay, recount. So they are fine. That is another interpretation. That's saper, and the third interpretation, which is the very organized. If you the Gemara many times, like for Tu B'Shvat, Arba'a Rashi Shana. There are four. When you learn something, if you really know it, you'll be able to summarize it, to give a synopsis. And whenever you give a synopsis, an expert will categorize. We've just spent 5 hours studying a certain topic. Let's review. There are five categories. And this category is subdivided into three parts. And in each one of the three parts, there are two essential points. When you master knowledge, and you review and you store it in your memory, it's always stored in terms of numbers. You count the concepts, you count the ideas, it's organized. Anything which is organized is always organized by number. It represents mastery of knowledge. And you always keep counting. One, there are five concepts. How many mesechtas are there in Shas? And you know Shas. Oh, you know Shas? How many mesechtas? Well, there are 60 mesechtas. Or are there really 60? Or are there 63? Or there are 62? Or there are less? How many mesechtas have Talmud Bavli? 36. So on and so forth. When you really got it, you'll put everything in your mind in terms of numbers to remember and to show your expertise. That's the third reason why Talmidei Chacham are called Soif. I believe Ezra is the first one, if I'm not mistaken, that we have this idea in the Gemara. It's very common, but it comes from, everything always traced back to Tanakh, and it comes from Ezra. He is called the Soifer. Here's what we have to review. Three reasons why it's called the Soifer. They count the letters. They know the Sisrei Torah. Soifer comes from the word Saper, to relate. And the third reason is they organize, they when they review and they store in their mind what they have mastered, it's always we are put in place in their mind with numbers. Okay, now we go to Pasuk.
First person to have the title of Sofer?
I don't know. I don't know.
Please,
I don't know. Yeah. What?
What about Baruch ben Neriah?
Is the where does he appear? He was called Sofer also? Could be. It could be. You're right, I'm not... Baruch ben Neriah was a Talmud of Yirmiyah, and Ezra was a Talmud of Baruch ben Neriah. Ezra is like the grandchild, so to speak, of Yirmiyah. And Yirmiyah was the one that had the Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. So we're going over here in this link of the Mesorah, Yirmiyah. From the Nevi'im, Yirmiyah had a special place as being one of the people who transmitted the Torah Shebaal Peh. Next was Baruch ben Neriah, and now we have Ezra. Ezra was one of the greatest personalities in Tanakh.
Did he write anything, Ezra? Anything attributed to him physically?
Anshei Knesset HaGedola, yes. The Gemara we're going to come across, he made many takanas. What? Ksav Ashuris. Well, he didn't invent it.
No, but he instituted.
Oh, that's the fourth reason why he's called a Sofer. You're right. You see, you're reminding me of all these things. The fourth reason, he instituted... Let's discuss. There are different opinions regarding what he did with regard to the Sefer Torah. According to some opinions, the Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu wrote a Sefer Torah. We know that. And that's the end of his life. Hashem told Moshe to write the Sefer Torah. Who wrote the last eight psukim? In the Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, in which script was it written? Was it written Ksav Ivri or Ksav Ashuris? That is much... discussion about the Luchos. Okay, were the Luchos written in Ksav Ashuris or the Luchos written in Ksav Ivri? The Luchos has 600, and the Luchos Shnios has 620 letters. Count the number of letters in Luchos Shnios. In Parshas Vayeshanan, you will discover Keser. The way to remember is the gematria of Keser. 620. What script? Okay, that's debate. That's a big... It's a Gemara. It's a Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, and it's discussed at great length with all the Rishon Farshim. I have a Sefer. Someone wrote a Sefer, a beautiful Sefer called Ksav Ivri, Ksav Ashuri. He goes through the whole sugya, and he has incredible chidushim. He spent 50 years on the writes in the Hakdam that he spent the Mechaber. Spent 50 years on the Sefer. Obviously, you know, not every single day, but he developed all the ideas in that Sefer over 50 years.
It evolved.
But... Okay, that's a very big debate. Okay, that's the Luchos. Okay, what about the Sefer Torah? I mean, we have it came from somewhere, the Sefer Torah. You'll tell me, oh, in the Midrashim it says that the entire Chamisha Chumsha Torah were written on the Luchos. Okay, I'm not arguing. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. That's a separate issue. But besides whatever was on the Luchos, there was also a Sefer Torah. That we know. There was a Sefer Torah that was in the Oron, and it was read seemingly on Hakel every 7 years in the Azara, and it was read on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would read from the Sefer Torah, or it could be there were other public events. There were fast days. There were different periods of time when there was an Eis Sarah, and they read different parts of the Torah. We don't know exactly all the details, but there was a Sefer Torah, and someone wrote that Sefer Torah. Moshe wrote that Sefer Torah. In which script was it written? Big debate. I believe most, or I've seen from Rav Schwab, they have Rav Schwab Sefer over here, it's a fantastic Sefer. Just came out only a few months ago. Rav Schwab, he has a lot of tradition, and that's in his Sefer. He writes, I think the majority opinion, the way I remember it, is it was written Ksav Ivri. Moshe wrote in Ksav Ivri. At this point in time, the Jewish people were living in Ashur. They will not really, they're 120, they live in Bavel, but they were under the influence. We discussed yesterday, Melech Asher, we discussed this, Melech Asher, we had a whole different approach to this, yesterday, why he mentions Melech Asher, but they were no longer familiar, the masses were no longer familiar with Ksav Ivri. So when they were presented, the Sefer Torah survived the Churban, that we know, we assume. Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu survived the Churban Bayis Rishon, and they come back to Eretz Yisrael. We have the Sefer Torah, it was preserved. What does it say? I don't know, I can't read it. It's Ksav Ivri. Who was a Baki in Ksav Ivri? Very few people. It was a lost language. We think that we know Ksav Ivri. You take an encyclopedia. But the Ksav Ivri that we have today is definitely not the original Ksav Ivri. There are so many variations of Ksav Ivri. You go take out the Encyclopedia Judaica. And you take it also, probably the best place to learn about this is in Rav Kasher, Rav Mendel Kasher, Torah Shlema. He has a whole section on Ksav Ivri. The Ksav Ivri, there are probably, I don't know how many different variations, 50, 100 even, you have the art scroll book from Rabbi Monk on the Aleph Beis, they have their one version. That one version is clearly not the only version of, I'll prove that to you another time, but of Ksav Ivri. Ezra came along and he knew Ksav Ivri inside out. He was the only one that was able to actually read the Sefer, not the only one, but he was able to read the Sefer of Moshe Rabbeinu and perfectly rewrite it in Ksav Ashuris. And then he disseminated it all over Klal Yisrael. Everyone should have a copy of the Sefer Torah. Until the time of Ezra, no one even knew what it said in the Sefer Torah. Because no one had a Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah were extremely rare. Ezra, either he translated it, he rewrote it from Ksav Ivri to Ksav Ashuris, and let everyone in on what it says, or Ezra, even if the Ksav of the Sefer Torah of Moshe was written Ksav Ashuris, Ezra disseminated it. He made it well known all over the entire world. We don't appreciate this one bit in our time. We live in the digital age where there's just no limit to how much you can write. Everyone can have a blog and do whatever they want. Even go back 30 years ago, go back 15 years ago. Not every yukul can go and write his chidushim for the whole world to see. It's a different world. And then you go back 50 years ago, not everyone can publish a book. You want to go if you want to go back so 30 years ago, okay, you're not going to have a blog. You can't go tell the whole world to go read my blog, but you want to publish a book, so you pay $3,000. You got a book, like just like that. So you can publish a book for a few hundred dollars. So you can go have it published digital. But in ancient times, you can publish a book today, I know, for $15. For $15, Kindle, you're not a Kindle, Create Space on online Amazon. You have a book, PDF, a print on demand. You don't have to publish today 5,000 copies. You can one book at a time. Print on demand, each book, just have the PDF. And you go back to the time of the Bayis Rishon. Now this really touches upon the Talmai HaMelech, who for the first time took the Sefer Torah and took 72 Talmidei Chachamim and had them translated into Greek. And now the whole world was able to know what it says in the Sefer Torah. That was already 200 years after Ezra. Ezra, and that 3 days of Choshech came down to the world. When Talmai HaMelech translated the Torah into Greek. Now what do we learn from that? That until Talmai HaMelech, the average person did not know what it said in the Sefer Torah. Because the Sefer Torah were extremely rare. They only were located in a few Batei Kinnasos, very well guarded, because the Torah is so mystical, it's so deep, and it requires great understanding, as we all know from learning. It's not for the masses. It's not for the masses to understand, to use. It has to be taught only from a reliable Rebbe to a student that really wants to learn. Go back further to the time of Ezra, before the time of Ezra, no one had a Sefer Torah. No one. It was only located in the Arad HaKadosh. Maybe there were a few copies, details I do not know, but Ezra made this change. No longer should the Sefer Torah only be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Aron. The time has come for people to have private copies. Not private every single person, but each country should have at least one copy of the Sefer Torah. Each or whatever it was. 200 years later, it became even more accessible by having it translated into Greek. And so on and so forth. So he's called a Sofer, a scribe, because he was the one that made this change. It's not going to be just in the Kodesh HaKadoshim one copy. I'm going to make many copies. And I'm going to disseminate. I'm going to take the Sefer, I'm going to write it. Either the Kiddush was he translated from Ivri to Ashuris, or even if it was already written in Ashuris, he's going to make multiple copies and send it out all over the world, that everyone should have a copy of the Sefer Torah. Well, he was a Navi. Times have changed. You read the Hadaros, the Skatnu Hadaros, there was a need for it. There's a need for it, so times have changed. Like we see today, times have changed. The weaker, the further we get from Matan Torah, the more we have a need for things to inspire us and keep us going. In earlier generations, they didn't need these things. They were on a much higher level. It was natural to them, Kedusha, and they were able to, by preserving it or sequestering the Torah only in very isolated locations, in a way enhanced the sanctity, the mystique of the Torah. It's hard for us to understand all this, but this is what it says in the Mepharshim. Yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is that Ezra understood all this at that time, so he tried to put everything b'ksav so people can be able to read it. What I want to get at is, what about the Torah Baal Peh?
No, Torah Baal Peh was still 100% transmitted orally. That took place much later. Much later. 400 years later.
Did he want to do that with his
whole person? No, there was no need for it to do. At this point in time, there was no need for it. There was no need.
Well, how is it going to be transmitted? It's going to be
orally. Orally.
Through
him, that's right. Through him. Well, he had a whole team of people. He's dealing with millions of people. They had Talmidei Chachamim. But the halacha is Dvarim. You're not allowed to write Torah Shabbat. It's forbidden. Bizman hazeh, we do an avera. Every time we write Chiddush Torah, every single book you have here is written in sin. The whole library here is really. Why? Everything is sin. And why? Because if we wouldn't do it, we would have nothing. There wouldn't be a Klal Yisrael. So it's an incredible Chiddush, Hayu Rashah. But at the time of Ezra, there was a change, absolutely. But the change was very slight, only that Torah Shebichsav.
He was afraid he was going
to
lose it all.
Right, but the only thing that he did was he disseminated Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav you're allowed to write. But the custom was it should be sequestered. Only to unique Yechidei school. That was the custom. Ezra said, no. We need some chizuk. We need some spiritual strength. So let's at least disseminate at least the Torah Shebichsav. That and therefore he was a sofer. He took the books, he kept writing many, many copies, hand copies, and he gave it out. Yeah.
Possible to learn of the Fushabi and the Who's Sefer Moyer, Tayyaris Maisha, Sharnasan Hashem Elokei Yisrael, according to what you're saying, Sefer Moyer could be that he expanded it, he spread it all out, and it says Tayyaris Maisha.
Right. I know that that's what it alludes to. This is not what I'm saying. I'm not. That's what it means. It's a fourth interpretation.
Since he changed the alphabet, so he had to write new Torahs because the old ones had been destroyed.
Well, there weren't that many Torahs that were destroyed in the Bayis Rishon. That's the assumption. The assumption was that in the time of the Bayis Rishon, this concept is assumed, there were very limited copies of Torah Shebichsaf. You have the Luchos, and you have a Sefer Torah Shemunach in the Aron HaKodesh. They denied there was no Kriyas HaTorah yet. Mm-hmm. At the time of the Bayis Rishon, there was no Kriyas HaTorah, as far as we know. What? The Bayis Rishon. There was no, not at least the way we know it.
Or Tefillah.
Tefillah also. It was private Tefillah. So you daven whatever your heart felt. You made up your own Nusach. You daven, you made it, you come to Shul, you pray your own Nusach. There's no formal Nusach. Kriyas HaTorah, there had to be Kriyas HaTorah to some degree, but not the way we know it. Not, it was much more limited, Kriyas HaTorah. And it's not that they were less religious than us. Chas v'shom, nothing further than the truth. They were much more religious. They didn't need it. They didn't need it. There was such an intense degree of Kedusha. It was natural to them, Kedusha. It wasn't necessary to come to Shul every Monday, Thursday and hear the Torah. The whole essence was Torah. And they had Torah Shebech Sav, but they had Svam, but not the way we know it, in a much more limited form. And everything oral, there was no everything like Rashi was all orally transmitted. Ezra came along and said, Niskatnu Hadoros, we got to do something about this. This cannot go on like this because people, if they're not going to have a Torah and they're not going to lane on Shabbos to Parsha and they're not going to lay Monday and Thursday, then it'll be zero. So let's mass produce Sifrei Torah, but it has to be preserved with the utmost sanctity. Again, 200 years before it was translated, which meant it had to be translated, means no one had access. Talmai did not have access. Even Talmai the Melech, he couldn't get a Sefer Torah. He didn't even know what it meant, what it said. It was sequestered, only for Yechidim, but it had to be done, disseminated. But Torah Shabbal Peh, zero. That was only transmitted orally. Then came a new tkufa of Talmai HaMelech, where the Torah was translated into Greek. And once it was translated, then they had also Unkelis came along and translated into Aramaic. And there was another person who translated into Greek. This is discussed in the Gemara Yushalmi, I forgot his name.
Akilas Hager,
he translated into Greek. So what's the difference between his translation and the translation of Talmai? Talmai was not a true translation. They changed things. Instead of saying Bereshis Bara Elokim, they wrote Elokim Bara Bereshis. So Akilas Hager, he translated into Greek Bereshis Bara Elokim. He translated it in Greek. And that was the most common language. And that was the first form, Targum, then Targum Yerushalmi, Targum Unkelis, and Akilas Hager. Akilas Hager, it's lost, we don't have, right? It doesn't exist. I don't think it exists. Did you hear anything about it?
No, we're existing, but I think one of the features of his thing was he tried to write it in Greek so that you could learn the Limudim, like the Gemara learns Limudim.
Right, Targum.
He tried to make it so that in the Greek you could understand the Limudim.
The Mamar Chazal. He received great praise. The Talmidei Chacham of his generation heaped upon him the greatest praise for what he did, Akilas Hager. Yes. And as far as I've read, it doesn't exist. We don't even have one copy of it in our time. It's completely extinct.
There are several mentions.
Yeah. References, what he says.
References of things that he translated.
So we do have those little snippets. So we have snippets in Midrashim, quotes, but the entire text from beginning to end appears to have been lost from us.
In the hieroglyphs that they found documents.
Really? Yeah.
And the document had whatever was written on it. When they removed that top layer,
yeah,
it was overwritten on
Akilas Hager. Wow, what a find. Priceless. Unbelievable. So this is the earliest stage of disseminating. And then came after the Churban Bayis Sheni, fast forward 200 years from the time of when it was first translated, during those 200 years after it was first translated, that opened up the way for more translations. Akila Sager, Targum Onkelis, Targum Yerushalmi, plus other types of Targumim. And then, when the Churban happened, the Bayit Sheni, then already it came time that the Torah Shebal Peh had to be put in writing. The Mishnah, the Gemara, and from there it's all downhill. Okay, so we have to go with Pasuk Zayin. What?
The Torah Moshe was written with these letters, like this.
It's that we don't know. There are different opinions in the Gemara. There are different. The Gemara has different opinions. The Gemara presents different opinions in which script was, which script. It's not known in which script two things. What were the Luchos written? And we have the Luchos Rishonos, the Luchos Shnios. We don't know which script it was written in. We have a difference of opinion. And the Sefer Torah of Moshe, we do not know in which script it was written. Even if it was written, by the way, this is something which is also very debated and very, very complicated. Let's say it was written Ksav Ashuris. Is the Ksav Ashuris of Moshe Rabbeinu equal to the Ksav Ashuris today? So there's definitely major similarities. But are the details exactly the same? Is the Kuf, and you have a letter Kuf, right? So the letter Kuf in the Sefer Torah, if the leg of the Kuf is connected to the top of the Kuf, is it kosher or puzzle? It's puzzle. Possible, but we have rayos that in the ancient Ksav Ashuris, the bottom of the kuf was connected to the top of the kuf. It was connected. It did touch. You have even the letter, leaving the letter ches and the letter hey, is it connected? So if it's connected, it's a ches. But it's not even so simple. So even the Ksav Ashuris, there are different forms of Ksav Ashuris, and Ksav Ivri. Oh, that goes without saying. Ksav Ivri, no two encyclopedias will present you with the same Ksav Ivri. So that's already another whole story. So this script evolved over many generations, and there are rules in halacha when it's kosher, when it's not kosher, how it's used. But it all started with Ezra. He was really the first one to open up the dissemination of script, of writing of the Torah to the masses. And he instituted, the biggest proof is, he instituted, now that I'm giving you a Sefer Torah, you better learn from it. You better learn. It was Ezra. It was Ezra who made the Takana. You learn Monday and Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, and you learn on Shabbos the entire parasha. Why? Ezra, if he made this Takana, he had to provide them with the means of fulfilling the Takana. He gave them a Sefer Torah. Which means until then, it wasn't available. Okay, yeah, it was Torah B'chsav. Let's not make any mistake. But just because of Torah B'chsav, you gotta go to City Hall to go take a look in the museum of Torah B'chsav in the glass case to see exactly, but only with certain permission and with the utmost sanctity. You know, yeah, when something is extremely limited, you have control. You can intensify the sanctity. You can only enter into the room where you have the Sefer Torah is present if you go to Mikvah, you're 100% tar, you take off your shoes. I'm not joking. Because when you limit something, then you have the ability to intensify the sanctity. When you disseminate something all over the world, it automatically decreases in its sanctity. Until recent times, people would not use their Hebrew name in the workplace. You have a Hebrew name, you have Moshe, and you have an English name, Moses. And when you go into the workplace, you wouldn't dare use your Hebrew, not because you're not religious. Pumfakert. You're so religious, the Yekas, you're so religious. You don't want to, Moshe, you're going to go have a Shvarts to call you Moshe? You're going to have a Gentile call you? That you're defiling your Yiddish name. This is a disgrace. You should say Moshe in a workplace where people are not dressed with the utmost sanctity. Only the Beis HaKnesses. But what happens once you start being called Mark or Moses, so you forget you're a Jew? I'm just like one of them. And then you start doing things you shouldn't be doing. So we become so low, you have to say in the workplace, Moshe, you know, my name is Moshe, maybe I should behave myself, I shouldn't behave like them. But by doing so, what's the trade-off? You have desanctified, you have defiled the sanctity of the name. Is it kedai to defile the sanctity of the name in order to preserve your inner sanctity? Absolutely. Why do you have to, not your grandfather? Because niskanu hadaros. So everything is a trade-off. It's niskanu, and it's exactly that process is clearly starting with Ezra HaSofer. And it was an incredible thing what he did. It's Kedai Hayra HaShah to de-sanctify the Torah to a certain degree for the greater good of maintaining the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. We spoke about this a few times, but now we're really coming into the really nitty-gritty of this matter. Okay, let's stop.